Morning. If you are visiting with us, this is not the regularly scheduled programming. Jason asked me to fill in for them, and they were celebrating their son Jacob's graduation and had lots of family in, and so wanted to take that time to be with them. And so I told them I would help them out. It's funny how God teaches us things. When you ask Him to teach you, He does, and often very quickly. I was preparing this lesson and had I looked at my calendar and told Jason I was good to take on this. I felt I had all the time I needed for sermon prep. And then as ministry and life both share this in common, there's only so much you can plan, prepare, and account for. There are lots of things that you just can't see coming. And this past week was one of those weeks. And so lots of different responsibilities and problems were coming my way that I didn't see coming. And I'm not going to lie to you guys, I was worried. I was worried about this lesson. Earlier this morning, Neil Plunkett asked if we were finally going to get some quality preaching, to which I elegantly responded, so... I was worried. I didn't know where I would find the time necessarily to make it all happen, to prepare for this. I was worried about some of the responsibilities that were now coming my way, how I would fill those roles and positions as needed. And then to make things really interesting. So we leave for camp Tuesday, thus the nasty beard. I love growing it up for camp and doing weird things with it. But we leave for camp Tuesday. Thursday, I realized that the bus company that's supposed to be taking us to camp hadn't booked our trip. So after coming to from passing out, I got everything taken care of, so no worries, we've got a bus, but it was just one more thing. And then it hit me in dealing with that, I've asked God to help me put these words into practice. And so I was receiving sufficient opportunities, ample opportunities, to not worry this week. No one said learning would be easy. Worry is something I think all of us are familiar with. This teaching of do not worry, it becomes increasingly easy as life goes smooth. When there's nothing out of order, when everything's in place and everything's running like it's supposed to, this teaching of do not worry is not a difficult one, but it's when things start to seem out of control, when things aren't running how we would like them to, this becomes a lot harder. And I realize that saying do not worry to someone who is worrying is about as helpful as saying calm down to someone who is worked up. Now, that's not just the most helpful advice. And I was curious in getting ready for this, how much of what we worry about actually comes to fruition. How much of our mind's consumption with these things that we worry about, how much of that time is worth investing? How much of what we worry about actually comes true? A study in 2015 showed that 85% of what subjects worried about never happened. Let that sink in a little bit. 85% of what subjects worried about never happened. Of the 15% of the time that it did, almost 80% of the subjects said that it was nothing to worry about because either they were more than equipped to handle the situation, it wasn't as big of a deal as they were making it out to be, or they learned an important lesson they wouldn't have learned otherwise. So altogether, that means 97%, roughly, of what we worry about is over our own fearful exaggerations and misconceptions. Things that we've made up to just worry about, basically. It makes the words of Michel de Montaigne very true. My life has been filled with terrible misfortune, most of which never happened. And we laugh at this because we know what that's like, right? We've worried about things and we spent a lot of time consumed by whatever life has thrown at us, only to find out, man, I shouldn't have been that worried about this. It's a funny thing. worry is. It consumes us, and yet oftentimes it's nothing to be worried about. This brings to mind, if you follow the NBA, the Philadelphia 76ers. Over the last few years, they've had this team slogan of trust the process. It goes back to a general manager that was hired on named Sam Hinkie. And he came in, and the Sixers were in the NBA wasteland, which is the middle of the road. It's actually probably better to be at the bottom than it is in the middle, because you don't have the means to break through that roof most of the time, and you're just kind of stuck there. And so after several years of mediocrity, Sam Hinkie decided to shake things up, and it was an unorthodox approach. What he did was he basically gutted the roster. Anyone that was good got traded. And the fan base starts worrying. They're seeing their favorite players go. They're seeing the talent level on the roster come down. And he's trading everybody off this team. And what he's getting back in return are high lottery draft picks and young, cheap talent. And even teams' bad contracts that would eventually come off the roll and open up cap space for them. And so people were just seeing this team lose and lose. And so they left that wheel of mediocrity very quickly and plummeted into the cellar of the NBA. Unfortunately, not everyone trusted the process, as Sam Hinkie would be fired, but he wasn't wrong. The three silhouettes you see up there are a product of trust the process. And if you watched the NBA this year, the Sixers are in very nice shape moving forward, much better than they were when Hinkie came in. This idea of trusting the process, it brings us to an important passage for this morning. Before we get into our text, the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7. We've started a series on the Sermon on the Mount this summer in our teen classes, and I told them last Sunday the most important question that you can ask yourself when reading the Sermon on the Mount is, will I? Will I put these words into practice? In Matthew chapter 7, starting in verse 24, Jesus says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise builder who built his house on the rock. Rains came down, streams rose, winds blew and beat against the house, and it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But anyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like the foolish builder who built his house on the sand. The rains came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash." There is a foundation that we are to be building on. A foundation which is Jesus. And Jesus tells us that the way to build on this foundation is to put these words, meaning what I just told you, into practice. Put these words, what I just said in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, put these into practice. And you'll be building on the rock. And see, that kind of goes back to the trust the process. That's what they didn't see, was Hinkie was giving them this foundation to build on. Jesus had just delivered three chapters worth of unconventional teachings. Teachings that fly against our logic and our intuition. Anyone here just naturally love your enemies? What about praying for those who persecute you? Who here turns the other cheek naturally when they're offended? See, these teachings that Jesus gives us, they go against our norm. They require a concerted and conscious effort, and this is where we get tripped up. Because in our minds, a clear and concerted and conscious effort means control. We have to control things to make sure we're doing what Jesus says. But in order to effectively follow these and put these into practice, what we really need to do is give up control. We need to trust the process, so to speak. We need to trust Jesus at His Word. And this is not to belittle worry. Believe me, I understand there are serious things going on in this world. But Jesus says that the key to it is trust, not control. And it is this struggle with trust and control that makes it so difficult for us to follow Jesus. It is this struggle with trust and control that makes it so difficult to follow his teachings, especially do not worry. Because I believe worry is a product of control, or lack thereof. We worry about the things that we don't have control of, the things that we can't manipulate. That's typically what bothers us. And sometimes even the things we do have control over, we worry about those as well. Worry is a product of control. So with all of this in mind, as we move forward into the text this morning in Matthew 6:25-34, I want us to keep two things in mind. And the first is, what is Jesus driving at when he says, do not worry? The second is, will I put this into practice? Because again, that is the most important question we can ask ourselves when reading the Sermon on the Mount. And I understand, too, how simple this sounds. I understand how simple what we're about to read sounds. And I get it. It may even seem too easy to actually work. But I believe in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus simplifies what we've made complicated. And I believe that's part of what he sets out to do in this teaching. So starting in Matthew 6, verse 25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or what you will drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is life not more than food, and the body more than clothing? Consider the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? And why do you worry about clothes? Consider how the flower of the field grows. It does not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed as fine as one of these. This is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today, tomorrow is thrown into the fire. Why do you worry? Or will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So do not worry about your life, what you will eat, what you will drink, or what you will wear. For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. And I think it's important for us to note here what Jesus had just said prior to this. It's what Brian read for us this morning. He just finished saying, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth. You cannot serve both God and money. And I think we often tend to separate this out, maybe just because that's how it's broken out in our Bibles. But I really think they're intended to go together. And Jesus is saying, don't waste your life chasing luxury. Don't waste your life chasing these things you know that the Father knows you need, and you know that the Father will provide for you. Chasing after wealth is a life seeking control. Chasing after what your Father will provide for you is a life seeking control. And it is a life that, if we're honest, it exhibits little faith in God's provision. When read together, we see Jesus is instructing his disciples that life is not about luxury or physical needs. A life spent chasing those things leads to worry. And worry takes our focus. Where it takes our focus off of God, it puts it onto us. Now, you may call this overconfidence. You may call this stubbornness. I'll give you either one of those. But I'm one of those people that when there is something important going on and a job that needs to be done, I want to do it myself. I admit I have control issues. I don't like handing that off to somebody else. And if I do have to hand it off to somebody else, I want to pick who I'm handing it off to, because again, I like control. And I was one of those students that hated group projects, especially if I felt I was smarter than the other people in my group, because A, I'm not smart enough to carry a group, but B, I don't want my grade hanging in the balance of somebody else. And so this struggle for control is something I'm familiar with, and it becomes really problematic when the person I am wrestling for control with is God. When I'm trying to take things from God which belong to Him and in His control, when I'm trying to take those things from God, what that does is it underestimates God's power. When Jesus tells us, "Do not worry about tomorrow," and we do, I don't think Jesus is saying that's sinful. I think He's saying this is proof of how little faith you have in Me. I believe Chris Seidman says it best: believing in myself more than I believe in Jesus could be considered unbelieving in the context of the Gospels. The call to believe is in a particular person, and it isn't me. When our life is focused on pursuing these things that our Father provides for us, it is a life that is seeking control. When we live in such a way where we're trying to take control from God, where we're not trusting in God, Jesus' response is, "You have little faith." Worry also takes our focus off of seeking the kingdom, and it puts it on to seeking self. I believe this is exactly what the text is speaking to. I believe verse 33 is the key to this text. Because Jesus could have left it at, do not worry about food, do not worry about drink, do not worry about anything, and just left it there. And then we would have room to kind of argue and debate what's the proper response, but Jesus gives us something to do in place of worry. He says, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat, drink, or wear, but seek first His kingdom and His righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you. He also goes on to say, are you not more important than birds? You not see how God takes care of them? You not see how God takes care of the grass? Are you not much more important than those things? Jesus would go on to say in chapter 7, if you then, though you are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Heavenly Father give to those who ask Him? Life in the kingdom is not meant to be worrying about the King's provisions. Life in the kingdom is meant to be seeking the King, to be following the King. And oftentimes that means we're going outside of the gates into a world of darkness, not worrying about the King's provisions. The key to worry seems to be a life spent seeking God. A life that has the priority, its number one priority, God, and we seek that priority, not allowing our minds to wander. Worry also takes focus off of the present, and it places it into the future. While God was definitely God in the past, and God will definitely be God in the future, it is in the present that God works through us. And so I wonder, how much have I missed? Because I've spent time worrying about a future that I don't even know exists. What have I missed because my fearful mind has exaggerated something? Who have I missed because I've allowed too much mental space for things beyond my control? We're called to a life in the kingdom. And again, that life is one seeking the kingdom and seeking the King and following wherever He goes. What are we missing when we allow our minds to focus on the future rather than the present? Jesus ends this text this morning with, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow. Tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough troubles of its own. My grandmother is a warrior. Not a warrior, a warrior. I think our entire family has just tried to not let her know things that may cause her to worry, which is almost anything. And we do that so she's not wasting her time. Statistics are even telling us it's a waste of time, right? 97% of what we're worrying about isn't anything to worry about. It's a lot of time wasted. A lot of time thinking about a future that isn't even real. Jesus says the way to combat worry is not control, but trust. The key to worry is not control, but trust. Trust that when he tells us we don't have to worry about something, we don't have to worry about it. And I realize that I've stood here just earlier and said that saying do not worry to someone who is worrying is about the least helpful thing you can say to them. But it's not me saying it. And that's the difference. Because the person who said it has power and authority that I don't have. The person that said it spoke to a storm and the storm stopped. Now, the person who said it spoke to a dead man in a tomb and the man came out of the tomb. I think Jesus' words clearly have a power and authority that ours just don't carry. And so when Jesus tells us, do not worry about tomorrow, I think we can trust him. I'm going to end this a little bit differently. I want the last thing for you to hear from me is Jesus' words. I believe they're that powerful, and that's what I want to end with. But before getting there, we come together every Sunday. And I truly do believe that when Jesus tells us not to worry about our life, but to seek first his kingdom, and all these things will be given to us as well, I truly believe he had us in mind. I truly believe he had the church in mind. If there is something that is worrying you, please don't hesitate to let us know. And I know there is few things in life that are probably more worry-inducing than walking down one of these aisles. So I won't even ask you to do that. If you would just catch somebody, one of the elders, one of the ministers, anybody, let us know. Because I think that's how God works through these things that worry us. Verse 25. Therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more than food, and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God closes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, how much more will he clothe you, you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all of these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own.